Happy Monday! My name is Mike Malloy. Thank you for tuning into the program tonight. I'm glad you could make it. Gosh, another victory. Another glorious victory. Another Middle Eastern tyrant. Soon to bite the dust. I'm being a smartass. We'll talk about this a little bit later. Dennis Kucinich had some interesting things to say about our involvement in Libya. And the illegal activities. You know, I'm really, it's kind of stupid to talk about illegal vis-a-vis American law and international law, that the United States government, Democrat or Republican, involves itself in now. It really is kind of silly. It's pointless. Major media pay zero attention when the United States decides, for whatever reason, and it's always altruistic, isn't it? It's always, lately anyway, it's all based on human rights. Human rights violations in country X, so let's start bombing it, or let's start destabilizing it, or let's just go ahead and have full-scale invasion. And then we'll see how long we can be there. You know, 3 years, four, five, six, eight, nine. Now, I know a lot of right-wingers make the argument of, it puts them in a bad position. They almost have to defend Obama, which they hate to do because, you know, he doesn't deserve to be there. A, he's a Democrat, but A plus he's, you know, colored. So it puts him in a very difficult position. But they all love it. You know, right-wingers all love war as long as it's not them fighting it. Yeah, go in there and kick some ass. That's what we got to do. So you may have your opinion about what's going on in Libya. On the one hand, on the other hand, what it has to do with the survival of this economy, this country, is I don't know. It's lost somewhere in all the saber rattling and the high fiving and so on and so forth. Assad of Syria obviously is next. So. We'll talk about it. We will. A little bit later in the program tonight. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor, whose message is, in memory of Providence Councilman Miguel Luna. That's it. That's the message. In memory of Providence Councilman Miguel Luna. Thanks, John. Listen to this. Just listen to this. Erin Carr Jordan, a child development specialist and mother of four, has launched a crusade against what she calls filthy conditions in the playgrounds at McDonald's, Burger King, and other fast food restaurants across the country. Tucked in the cracks of crawl spaces, embedded in the surfaces of twisty slides and caked on steps in many playlands, are traces of fecal matter and strains of staph and bacteria that can lead to meningitis and gonorrhea, according to lab results commissioned by the Arizona State University developmental psychology professor. That's what Erin Carr Jordan does. After a self-guided tour of the fun rooms at dozens of McDonald's and Burger King restaurants, showing graffiti, smeared grime, hairs, and decaying food, Jordan released a YouTube video calling for mandatory cleanliness regulations at restaurant playgrounds. Oh, no. Here we go again. See? What do you want to bet? She's a liberal. Mandatory cleanliness standards? McDonald's could not be reached for comment. In a statement, Burger King said that its cleaning standards include, quote, procedures for daily, weekly, and monthly cleaning of playground equipment and pads and foams. On a quarterly basis, playground restaurants are also required to be cleaned by a professional cleaning service, end quote. So there, smart-ass professor! Yeah, but what about the What about the bacteria, the staph infections, and or the staphylococcus and the staphylococcus and the meningitis germs and the gonorrhea germs? What about those, Mr. Burger King? In the video that's out there on YouTube, Professor Jordan says she was taking her three-year-old to the restaurant, to the restroom, at a Tempe, Arizona McDonald's. When he begged to go on the restaurant slide, she followed and found scrawled swear words and muck inside, according to the video. After complaints to multiple managers went nowhere, Jordan began swabbing samples, which she sent to a testing lab. The results featured 13 pages of disease-causing pathogens. And according to the report, layers and layers and layers and layers of just disgustingness. Well, it raises a question immediately. Why was Professor Jordan taking her three-year-old into a crap hole like McDonald's or Burger King to begin with? I mean, seriously, ma'am, unless you just stopped there to use the commode. All right. I mean, that's understandable. We've done that before, you know, on the highway, and somebody in the car has to pee. Oh, there's a McDonald's. That's a good place to pee. You bet it is. It's a horrible place to eat, but it's a good place to pee. So you pull in and, you know, you try not to touch anything. As soon as you walk in, you get that smell. You know that smell. That fast food smell. So you run to the bathroom where you have the smell of, you know, a bathroom, and it relieves the smell out there in the fast food section. Ew, don't touch anything. So, okay. We don't even stop for the bathroom there anymore. I can't stand it. I mean, I cannot handle fast food joints. McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, all of these disease holes. Why does anybody go there? I don't get it. So, Professor, listen, we appreciate your YouTube video. The capitalists who own these fast food feeding holes that are causing death and destruction and disease in America just from what they serve to eat are going to do nothing about your video. They'll issue a statement like Burger King. We clean the place all the time. What the hell's wrong with you, lady? Go on home. You pointy-headed professor! But it still raises the question. It really does, Professor Jordan. Why in God's name would you be taking your child, your developmental psychologist, oh my God, your developmental specialist? I'm just hoping that Professor Jordan was only stopping for a pee break and not for to go in there to get anything for her child or herself. Nothing. None of it. Not even the coffee anymore. Nothing. These places are vile. They are destructive in so many ways. They assist in cutting down rainforests so that they can buy huge swaths of land and hire tenant farmers so they can raise more cows, so they can slaughter more beef, so they can send this putrid corpses up the United States to make your goddamn hamburgers. Wise up, people! And now this, pathogens for everything from gonorrhea to staphylococcus to meningitis. And that's before you even eat the food. Wake up, people. Wake up, for God's sake. Wake up!
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This, I don't quite understand what I'm about to share with you. It's from CNN. You know, the 10th anniversary of the total failure of the Bush crime family and our security state to protect us from an attack that took 3,000 lives in this country. The 10th anniversary is coming up. In September. We're not that far away. It's going to be, if history repeats itself in terms of the way politicians exploit this, it's going to be a horrific, bad, nasty, ugly day. I'm sure every Republican political candidate or anything will use this somehow to cast aspersions on Obama, or else they'll ignore it completely because it happened during one of the filthy Republicans' watch, Bush Cheney. And depending on where you fall on the 9/11 spectrum, the 9/11 spectrum, it was either a deliberate act a la Operation Northwoods planned back in the 60s, or it was a result of the total incompetence of the Bush-Cheney crime family. And somewhere between those extremes lies the truth. But this, did you hear the first responders, the people that rushed in to rescue their fellow human beings? Didn't make any difference who the people were in that in the Trade Center. Didn't make any difference. Nobody stopped to say, what's your religion? Where are you from? What's your nationality? Where are your papers? Are you here legally? Are you documented? Let me see the color of your skin. Here, let me blow off all that ash. Oh, what color are you? No, nobody did that. The responders, first responders, the firefighters, the EMS people, they rushed in, put their own lives at risk. Scores of them died, were crushed, burned to death, asphyxiated. And now the first responders who survived that are not invited to this year's September 11th memorial ceremony at Ground Zero. They are not invited. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg confirmed that today. There were about 3,000 people who died that day and about 3,000 men and women who risked their lives, who risked their limbs, who risked their lungs. In a statement, Mayor Bloomberg spokesman Andrew Brent said the commemoration ceremony is for the victims' families only. Quote, Brent, while we are again focused on accommodating victims, family members, given the space constraints, we're working to find ways to recognize and honor first responders and other groups at different places and different times. Now, these are the same first responders who were told to piss off by the U.S. Congress when it came to providing funds to take care of them, to take care of their diseases, the ones who are dying, to take care of their kids, who might be 12 and 13 years old now, to take care of their spouses. They were told to piss off by the Republicans. As one of the first responders, a guy named John Feel, founder of an advocacy group for the police officers, firefighters, civilian volunteers, and others who worked at Ground Zero, he said the best of the best that this country offered 10 years ago are being neglected and denied the rightful place. He said Denise Villamia, a first responder who worked at Ground Zero for several months, cried over the phone as she recalled her, quote, totally heartbroken reaction to the news that she could not attend the memorial service. She said, I'm crying because it's really a big betrayal on the part of the city to rob me from my way to pay homage and to find that comfort and healing. I feel like I've been robbed of my way to pay tribute. Now, in addition to the victims' families, politicians, including two presidents, are expected to be in attendance. On and on and on. It's astonishing because so many of these 3,000 first responders are now members, I hate to use this term, but they're members of that exclusive group, the Walking Dead. They don't have a chance for recovery from the diseases they picked up because instead of running away, they ran toward. And now the Bloomberg, and I don't give a goddamn about space constraints. What the hell does that mean? Hold the memorial service in a football stadium. Hold it in Yankee Stadium. Hold it someplace. But to tell the first responders, you're not welcome? Oh, for Christ's sake.
America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Hey, little sister, what have you done? 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor. His message? The sponsorship is in memory of Providence Councilman Miguel Luna. Thank you, John. What do you think about that? The first responders, the people who really... and by the way, I said it was from CNN. TVNewsLies.org had this story, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. And that's where you should go to get the news, of course. They had it last week. I missed it. But as TV News Lies in an editorial comment, they said Bush and Giuliani should be barred from the scene of their crime. Yeah, I believe that. So, once again, the people who really matter in this country are being disrespected. Spurry 2 writes, you can't expect the political elites coming out on 9/11 to pose for the cameras with cute orphans and have the pictures cluttered with 40-year-old men in wheelchairs trailing oxygen tanks. That just wouldn't look good. And if these dying young men or their widows and orphans whip out protest signs, oops, it could really get out of hand. And the elites might try to fight back before they're overwhelmed by the crowd. Yeah, isn't that the truth? Bastards. Roz writes, Mike, I saw an interview where a couple of firemen were giving their views on not being invited to the 9/11 memorials. How disgusting. But these two men were full of grace and generosity. It didn't raise their voices in anger once. It just goes to show the difference between those who do good works and those that cowardly sit back, collect the big bucks, and just watch. To add insult to injury, these firefighters cannot claim disability for any cancers that they may sustain from the dangerous work they did. It is shameful and oh so conservative. And who's surprised? Never stops, does it? Oh, and by the way, we've talked about, you've talked about, you've heard people talk about the Fairness Doctrine that was erased back in the mid-80s. It was only officially erased today. I didn't know that. According to Politico.com, the FCC gave the coup de grace to the Fairness Doctrine today as that commission axed more than 80 media industry rules. The FCC? Earlier this summer, FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski agreed to erase the rule. But the action Monday puts the last nail into the coffin for the regulations that sought to ensure discussion over the airwaves of controversial issues that did not exclude any particular point of view. A broadcaster that violated the rule risked losing its license. Can you believe that? Can you imagine? Yeah, there was a time when a nest of vipers, a nest of scum-sucking liars like Fox News Channel wouldn't even have been allowed on the air, because they are nothing more than a propaganda operation. But that was then, and this is now. The commission voted in 1987 to do away with the rule, but the language implementing that fairness doctrine was never removed. And the move today, once published in the Federal Register, effectively erases the rule. It has to be published, and it never was. Now, the move today is part of the FCC's response to a White House executive order from, you know, the liberal progressive president directing, quote, a government-wide review of regulations already on the books, end quote, and it's designed to eliminate unnecessary regulations. Fairness doctrine? Necessary? Oh, well, hell no. What's necessary about that? That was then. This is now. Altogether, the FCC tossed 83 rules and regulations. Oh, and Genachowski said in a statement that the move to do away with 83 rules and regulations regarding broadcast. I wonder if that means I can say, whoops, if I can say bullshroom. I wonder if can't do that. But removing the fairness doctrine, oh, that's okay. Genachowski said in a statement that the move is aimed at promoting, quote, a healthy climate for private investment and job creation, end quote. Both the Obama administration, you see, and the FCC have come under criticism by business groups over laws and regulations such as health care reform and net neutrality. Yeah, well, okay. Can't have anything like, you know, broadcasting rules. I mean, there was a time. Can you believe there was a time when a broadcasting license was not a license to print money? It was designed to keep the public. Oh, you're laughing already. I see. To keep the public informed of the truth of critical issues. And how did they arrive at the truth? Well, if somebody said up is down and somebody else said down is up, they put both views on and you could decide. Just like it's better to behead babies. No, it's not better to behead babies. Okay, let's talk about it. That kind of thing. Of course, there are absurd limits to any rule. But the idea was to present opposing political points of view so that people could make up their own mind based on the available, And they did this because, after all, journalism has a First Amendment protection. Plumbing doesn't. Carpentry doesn't. Being a doctor doesn't. The law doesn't. Pipe fitting doesn't. Hedge fund operator doesn't. But journalism does have First Amendment protection. And look what they've done to it. Oh, my, my, my. It's good news day. Someone's at to do. There's more here. I never know quite. Oh, yeah. Did you hear that Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein has hired a high-profile Washington defense lawyer? Really? This was on late this afternoon, New York Times website. News that Blankfein had hired separate legal counsel immediately raised questions as to whether Mr. Blankfein himself had received a subpoena in connection to outstanding inquiries. Goldman Sachs. Gee, Mr. Obama, see what happens? You go on vacation and the people you're trying to protect get served apparently a subpoena? Why else would you hire a high-profile Washington defense lawyer? A person close to the matter, but not authorized to speak on the record, said the firm, Goldman Sachs, is cooperating and that no executive at the firm has received an individual subpoena. Oh, okay. Well, then Blankfein didn't. He just hired a criminal defense attorney because it's Monday. And shares of Goldman, which had been trading around $111 a share all day, fell nearly 5% after Reuters reported that Mr. Blankfein had hired Reed Weingarten. A Goldman spokesman told Dealbook, quote, as is common in such situations, Mr. Blankfein and other individuals who were expected to be interviewed in connection with the Justice Department's inquiry into certain matters raised by the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations report hired counsel at the outset. that's common. Goldman Sachs and Blankfein are facing just a whole array of legal actions stemming from investigations into Goldman's role in the financial crisis. But on the one hand, you have that story, and on the other hand, well, I'll tell you when we come back. It's I don't know. It just gives you whiplash here. Stick around. The hour. You see, back in June, Goldman Sachs received a subpoena from the office of the Manhattan District Attorney, which is also investigating Goldman's role in the financial crisis. The subpoena, a request for information, what I have here says here, stemmed from a 650-page Senate report from the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, or PSI. That had indicated that Goldman had misled clients about its practices related to mortgage-linked securities. No. Really? You think? Well, how do you square that with this. Eric Schneiderman. Now, I want you to remember two words. Elliot Spitzer. Okay? Just hold that. Hold that thought for a minute. Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General of New York, has come under increasing pressure from the Obama administration to drop his opposition to a settlement with banks over dubious foreclosure practices, according to people briefed on discussions about the deal. In recent weeks, Sean Donovan, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, and high-level Justice Department officials have been waging an intensifying campaign to try to persuade New York's Attorney General to support the settlement. Take the settlement, Eric! Eric and top prosecutors in some other states have objected to the settlement with major banks, saying, well, it'll restrict their ability to investigate and prosecute wrongdoing in a variety of areas, including the bundling of loans in mortgage securities. Whoops, now wait a second. Over here it says Lloyd Blankfein has hired a lawyer, a criminal defense attorney, a 650-page Senate report, and over here it says, Mr. Donovan and others in the Obama administration have been contacting not only the Attorney General of New York, but his allies, including consumer groups and advocates for borrowers, seeking help to secure the Attorney General's participation in the deal. Take the deal, Eric! That's what the Justice Department is saying. Look! It's millions of dollars. Take the deal. Don't investigate. Don't prosecute. Don't gather in evidence. For God's sake, do you realize what you're doing, boy? In an interview 2 days ago, on Thursday to Friday, Sean Donovan, the Secretary for Housing and Urban Development, defended his discussion with New York Attorney General, saying the discussion was motivated by a desire to speed up help for troubled homeowners. Well, that's why we're doing this. That's why the Obama administration is doing this. We want to speed up help for troubled homeowners. And you know what will speed things up, Mr. New York Attorney General, is if you don't investigate these criminal capitalist sons of bitches in New York and find evidence and prosecute them. If you do that, it'll slow everything down for the besieged homeowners. Oh, for Christ's sake, come off it, Obama administration. What's the difference between these people and Bush Cheney? All right, they're smarter. All right. They can speak gooder. Okay. Donovan said he had not spoken to bank officials or their representatives about trying to persuade Mr. Schneiderman to get on board with the deal. And any comments to the contrary notwithstanding, that's a lie. That's a lie. We never said anything to anybody about nothing. It's just, you people still, some of you still identify Barack Obama and this administration as liberal, progressive, democratic? Are you kidding? Who are you trying to kid? Are you kidding yourselves? You're damn sure not kidding me. Well, I don't know you. I have no idea what your personal private thoughts are. But for God's sake, I still get emails. Leave Obama alone! You're going to help get him, defeat him, Aloy! And then they'll put right-wingers on the Supreme Court. Oh, God. Stop investigating. Now, the reason I said, remember those two words, Elliot Spitzer, this was right where Elliot Spitzer was, 4 years ago, right before the collapse? Do you remember? Do you remember? Spitzer was ready to bring down the hammer. And what happened? Within hours of word getting out that Spitzer was about to bring down the hammer, oh my God, look! He sees a whore! He's married and he goes to a hooker! Oh my God! Yeah, but what about the crimes that he... Oh, look, he goes to a hooker! Yeah, but what about the... Look, he's got a broad on the side! Oh, my God! This is awful! Elliot Spitzer, resign! but what about the criminal? And so, no, none of that, none of that. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it. But no, look on the TV. What are the TV talking about? They're talking about his hooker. They're talking about he had a high-priced whore woman thing, you know? He did. And you know what? What? He's married. Oh. Well, so which is the more important story? That Elliot Spitzer pays for sex? Or that Elliot Spitzer was about to bring the hammer down on capitalist pigs who went on to ruin the... Oh, never mind. I know which story is the more important. Yeah, the hooker. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. Hope you'll bear with me on this one. I don't normally do this, but there are so few people left in positions of government anywhere, like Jack Layton. And I know most of us Americans have never heard of Jack Layton. Wouldn't know him from Adam's house cat. Let me just tell you very quickly, Jack Layton was a Canadian social democratic politician. He was the leader of the official opposition to current government. He was the leader of the New Democratic Party from 2003 to 2011. And he died today, I believe. I think he passed today or yesterday. And the reason I want to mention, he wrote a letter to his fellow Canadians right before he died. And I just want you to hear some of it, all right? Don't want to be maudlin, but this guy had a lot of good things to say, and he did a lot of good things. He said, "Dear friends, tens of thousands of Canadians have written to me in recent weeks to wish me well. I want to thank each and every one of you for your thoughtful, inspiring, and often beautiful notes, cards, and gifts. Your spirit and love have lit up my home, my spirit, and my determination. Unfortunately, my treatment has not worked out as I hoped. So I'm giving this letter to my partner, Olivia, to share with you in the circumstance in which I cannot continue." And then he mentions a couple of things, political things. And he says, "A few additional thoughts. To other Canadians who are on journeys to defeat cancer and to live their lives, I say this. Please don't be discouraged that my own journey hasn't gone as well as I'd hoped. You must not lose your own hope. Treatments and therapies have never been better in the face of this disease. You have every reason to be optimistic, determined, and focused on the future. My only other advice is to cherish every moment with those you love at every stage of your journey, as I have done this summer. To the members of my party, we've done remarkable things together in the past 8 years. It's been a privilege to lead the New Democratic Party, and I'm most grateful for your confidence, your support, and the endless hours of volunteer commitment you have devoted to our cause. There will be those who will try to persuade you to give up our cause, but that cause is much bigger than any one leader, Answer them by recommitting with energy and determination to our work. Remember our proud history of social justice, universal health care, public pensions, and making sure that no one is left behind. Let's continue to move forward. Let's demonstrate in everything we do in the 4 years before us that we are ready to serve our beloved Canada as its next government. To young Canadians, all my life I have worked to make things better. Hope and optimism have defined my political career, and I continue to be hopeful and optimistic about Canada. Young people have been a great source of inspiration for me. I've met and talked with so many of you about your dreams, your frustrations, and your ideas for change. More and more, you are engaging in politics because you want to change things for the better. Many of you have placed your trust in our party. As my time in political life draws to a close, I want to share with you my belief in your power to change this country and this world. There are great challenges before you, from the overwhelming nature of climate change to the unfairness of an economy that excludes so many from our collective wealth, and the changes necessary to build a more inclusive and generous Canada. I believe in you. I believe in your energy, your vision, your passion for justice. They're exactly what this country needs today. You need to be at the heart of our economy, our political life, and our plans for the present and the future. And finally, to all Canadians, Canada is a great country, one of the hopes of the world. We can be a better one, a country of greater equality, justice, and opportunity. We can build a prosperous economy and a society that shares its benefits more fairly. We can look after our seniors. We can offer better futures for our children. We can do our part to save the world's environment. We can restore our good name in the world. We can do all these things because we finally have a party system at the national level where there are real choices, where your vote matters, where working for change can actually bring about change. In the months and years to come, New Democrats will put a compelling new alternative to you. My colleagues in our party are an impressive, committed team. Give them a careful hearing. Consider the alternative and consider that we can be a better, fairer, more equal country by working together. Don't let them tell you it can't be done. My friends, love is better than anger. Hope is better than fear. Optimism is better than despair. So let us be loving, hopeful, and optimistic. And we'll change the world. All my very best. Jack Layton. Now, I left out some of what he wrote, but he died today. And when you consider what he and his party stood for, and how impossible it is for an American politician of any stripe to say the things that Jack Layton said in this letter, his goodbye letter, which was written 2 days ago. It's just a shame that we do not have the kind of leadership in this country that a Jack Layton represented to Canadians. So to the people in Canada who saw Jack Layton as a leader with a social conscience, a decent man, I'll just offer my little condolences. The loss of this this man. And thanks to the people who sent me the report about his passing and also the links to the information about his political history and what he wrote 2 days ago. Meanwhile, back in this country, the Social Security Disability Fund which I didn't know this. Apparently, it's a separate fund from the standard Social Security insurance fund. But the disability fund is fast running out of money and may not be able to make payments starting in 2017. Oh, I know, 6 years from now. But it's thanks in part to the bad economy driving claims up over the past decade. This is according to the Associated Press, and it's reported at Politico. I have read that a lot of people who normally would continue to work if there were jobs have dropped out of the workforce because there's no job and have applied for disability payments under Social Security. And in so many instances, those claims are being granted. This may or may not be part of that. But it says applications for benefit claims have risen almost 50% in the past 10 years. As many people with disabilities are laid off and cannot find new jobs in the difficult job market. And the Associated Press added the rush for benefits is causing a major backup for applicants currently waiting to get their cases decided. Now, one temporary fix would be for Congress to combine the retirement and disability funds, which was done in 1994, when the disability fund previously neared insolvency. But do you think the Republicans are going to go along with that? Do you really? Oh, okay, good, because they won't. In a bad economy, more people obviously make claims for disability benefits because they get laid off and unable to find another job. That's A, that's B, and C, the filthy Republicans and the cowardly Democrats will not increase or extend unemployment benefits. See how this works? 13.6 million people get disability benefits from Social Security or Supplemental Security Income, SSI. We'll be right back.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. It's time for Prairie 2. Subject line, talking about yourself in the third person. The New York markets ended up a few points today. Despite being weighed down by the major banks, Bank of America lost another 6%, making for a 50% decline in stock value over the past year. There are continued worries about that trillion in subprime loans they hold and fears that attempts to unload divisions to raise cash may take place at fire sale prices, leaving nothing but a zombie bank behind. If you look a little too close, of course, all the Wall Street banks are really just zombies. They have been animated by the printing presses of the Federal Reserve, and they lack a soul. That's not a problem, though. Bankers don't have souls to begin with. Goldman Sachs dropped 5% on word. Their CEO, Lloyd Blankfein, has lawyered up with the high-profile D.C. Defense Counsel. The company spokesman described this as nothing unusual and standard operating procedure. Well, every successful crime family needs a highly paid mouthpiece, so no, it's nothing unusual. It's likely that Blankfein wouldn't be doing this unless there is a big criminal case coming out of the Department of Justice, and Blankfein and Goldman Sachs' interests are going in different directions. This is likely to be either bad news for the bank or very bad news for Blankfein. Oil prices dropped sharply in early trading on news that Tripoli fell without a significant fight. Then the news was plastered with headlines that it could take many years to get Libyan oil production going again. This despite ongoing reports that the oil facilities had been largely in rebel hands from early on, didn't suffer any damage, and have continued in production. Michelle Bachmann has promised that a President Bachmann will provide $2 gasoline She's starting to talk about herself in the third person, and she's not even in the Senate. No explanation of how, of course, but she blames Obama for the high price, since gasoline was only $2.79 when he took office. In fact, you could see gasoline at $2 a gallon if the Dodd-Frank law is enforced as written. That law would prohibit banks and hedge funds from trading in the futures market. The CEO of ExxonMobil testified to Congress that 40% of the pump price was from this speculative trading on Wall Street. The problem is that Republicans, especially the teabaggers like Bachman, don't believe in any regulation of the rich at any time and are doing everything possible to make Dodd-Frank ineffective. Keep in mind that when you take 40% off to get down to the real price, then you must consider what they added to the price to get the inflated price. The math is that Wall Street is adding fully two-thirds to the price of gasoline. Of course, that's the cost of the free market. Teabaggers and libertarians are always wanting to end the gas tax, which is 18.4 cents a gallon, and will try to do so again in September. Who needs public roads? The free market can do better. But they have no problem with the free market adding 66.6% to the price of gasoline, and it would be the same for free market roads. It's only because Obama won't let them drill, baby, drill, don't you know? Even though there has always been a surplus of gasoline in the U.S. as we export billions of barrels just to get rid of the crap. This is because gasoline is a waste product of oil refining and not the principal production goal of the petrochemical industry. If there truly was a free market, gasoline would be $2 a gallon or less. But you need to believe in angels to actually believe in free markets. The oil companies used to burn gasoline to get rid of it, and would again if they could, just to keep the price up. But Wall Street does an even better job of gouging on price by managing the news to make you think gasoline is a rare and valuable commodity. They also use their unlimited money to tie up the supply to the point that even oil company executives are impressed. And that's saying something. PrayNumeral2.com. Yeah, do you remember? Remember when the head of ExxonMobil just kind of sat there?
You people are so goddamn crazy. You know, 40% of the price at the pump was from the traders on Wall Street.
And Prairie 2 makes a very interesting point here, doesn't he? They'll go after that 16-cent gas tax.
Let's get rid of that. Excise tax. We don't want any free roads. Let the roads go to hell so the private companies move in and take over and set up, you know, toll roads.
But when it comes to the 40%, that is a result of hedge fund speculators. Nah. And the law is right there. Dodd-Frank's right there. And as you also know, the teabaggers, who really only have the interests of your pocketbook and mom and apple pie and the American flag at heart, they're doing everything they can to prevent the Dodd-Frank law from being enforced. Oh, my.
Strike, oil strike, lorry strike, bread strike.
inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
Before the hour, stick around the third hour. We're going to take a look at what happened in front of the White House over the weekend on Saturday with the tar sands protest. The Obama administration, it has to be from the Obama administration, the Park Police works for the National Park Service, which in turn works for what, Department of Interior? Is that it? Or the Department of what? I think it's Interior, who has a cabinet officer appointed by or nominated by and confirmed by nominated by Barack Obama, so he can work right back up the chain. So President Obama, even though he's on vacation, made it very clear to those people exercising their First Amendment rights to peacefully assemble to petition the government for redress of grievances, what will happen if you keep it up. That'll be next hour. Today, I made the mistake, as I do every day. I mean, it's not a mistake. I do it deliberately, but I feel like I'm making a mistake. Turned on the news channels, CNN, MSNBC. I know. I should stay with TVNewsLies.org and BuzzFlash and Democratic Underground, and, you know, the usual list, Politico.com, and this and that and this and that. I know. But I like to see what the popular press, what's the big story today? Is it something about the Kardashian people? Is it something about, I mean, what is it? What is it? What's going on? Has another white woman been kidnapped in the islands? What is it? Well, today, there they were, all the breathless reporting. I thought some of these mostly female anchor women were going to hyperventilate. And the infield reporters standing somewhere in Libya, I thought they were going to hyperventilate. They just, I mean, everybody was full of grins and backslapping and eager updates. And the glee was just leeching out of my television set. It was just really something like, okay, what the hell has happened? Oh, the bombing of Libya by NATO. You remember NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, put together to defend Western Europe against the Soviet hordes as they came blasting across Germany. You remember, but never mind. Anyway, in March of this year, the U.S. and our allies in NATO launched military operations in Libya by saying it was a humanitarian intervention. Remember that? We were going to go in to offer surveillance and to the rebels. And what else were we going to do? Some bombing? Was that it? U.S. diplomats and world leaders talked about claims of an impending massacre in Benghazi. In eastern Libya. Remember all that? So, apparently Tripoli, the capital, fell today. How many civilians have been butchered by not just the Libyan dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, but also by NATO's bombing raids? Will never be known. I mean, it's just civilian deaths. Who cares? Doesn't matter. So, as Dennis Kucinich pointed out, regardless of whether Gaddafi is ousted, now he wrote this over the weekend before the glorious news was broadcast round the world this morning by the breathless CNN anchor people. Anchor dudes and anchor chicks. There they were. A report's coming out of Libya. Oh, my God, people are in the square, and they're applauding. Let's go to Abe Snake, who's standing right in the middle of it. Abe, what do you have? Oh, well, listen, this is wonderful. And maybe it is. Who knows? But as Dennis Kucinich says, the war against Libya has seen countless violations of United Nations Security Council resolutions by NATO and UN member states. The funneling of weapons to Libyan rebels was from the beginning of the conflict in clear violation of United Nations Security Council Resolution 1970, the use of military force on behalf of the rebels in an attempt to impose regime change has undermined international law, damaged the credibility of the United Nations. Countless innocent civilians have been killed, and NATO airstrikes continue to place many at great risk. He goes on to say the leading donor nations of NATO, the U.S., France, and Great Britain, have been free to prosecute war under the cloak of this faceless bureaucratic alphabet security agency, now multinational war machine, which can violate UN resolutions and kill innocent civilians with impunity. War crimes trials are only for the losers. The prospective conquerors, the Western powers, and the rebel proxies will then expect to be able to assert control over Libya's vast oil and natural gas reserves. No! The capitalists look at the war as an investment. Dennis didn't say that. I'm saying it. And control over Libya's wealth as an opportunity to make a return on that investment. Dennis says, is that cynical? Then tell me why else we are at war in Libya. Well, he's a tyrant, Dennis. I mean, goddamn. Come on, Dennis. You've been up there in Cleveland too long. This is a tyrant. I just couldn't believe these CNN and MSNBC people. It's just so awfully irritating. You know, the hyperventilation. It's almost like they, I don't know. I'm very close to getting sexist here. And if I cross the line, tough. Send me an email and call me a sexist pig. I don't care. I really don't. But, I mean, I try to keep it as high a plane as I can, but sometimes when I watch some of these bubble-headed blondes and brunettes and so on and so forth, and I'm talking about the women now, when I watch some of these women, anchor people, just get all goose pimply. I mean, you can almost see the goose pimples on their flesh. Because they're dressed that way. Let's face it. The way the women on television are dressed and made up is to attract male viewers. It doesn't make any difference what they're saying. It's just to get them in. Oh, look. Oh, God damn. Who's that? Woo-woo. Hey, sweetie. Ha! So, to watch some of these anchor women. I'll talk about the men in a second. But to watch some of these anchor women just get all fluttery. I don't know what other word to use. Goose pimply, fluttery. Oh, the advancing armies. Ooh, the airstrikes. Ooh, the blood, the bodies. Oh, look at the cell phone video. We know you can't see anything in this half-assed video we have here, but it's from a cell phone. Look, look. Those are buildings. Look, those are corpses. Oh, move the camera. Ooh. War is wonderful when you're sitting in Washington, D.C. in a studio or New York or L.A. or someplace and you know, you got all your correspondents out there and you're just tying everything together like a good anchor person. Oh, my God, I love this. I love my job. I love my job. Ooh, look, here they come. Here they come into Tripoli, or is that Benghazi, or I don't know. I just learned how to pronounce these towns, these cities. Oh, 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 this is wonderful. Oh, truth, justice, and freedom works once again. Yes, NATO strikes out. Another tyrant. Lop his head off. Hang him. Do whatever. Get him. Woo! Hot damn. High five. High ten. Don't forget the oil. Yeah, isn't it great? I mean, it really is. Tyrant after tyrant just dropping like flies. Isn't it great? Man. Boy, we will kick ass and take names. just watch out, watch out, watch out. If you have oil, natural gas, you know, unless you're China or Russia, that doesn't count. No, 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 no. But if you're one of these other countries that can't defend itself, you get involved in a civil war, we're right there. You know, human rights violations and all that. Yes, sirree, Bob. Get Gaddafi, get his sons, cut their heads off, cut their heads off. Come on, cut their heads off. Or at least hang them. Get them, get them, get them, get them, get them. Won't take no snot from any of these people. No, hell no. Who's next? Let me see here. Oh, yeah, that's right. Syria. Mr. Assad. Yoo-hoo. Guess who's coming to dinner? Was nothing but a burglar's toy.
They chained my mind to an endless tomb, and they took my only son from me. I know it's true, oh so true, 'cause I saw it.
The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
Better speak to the powers that be today. Hey Joe, where you going with that gun in your hand? You can take your revenge, but you'll still feel bad. There must be more to life.
Ten before the hour. Musa Ibrahim, the government spokesman in Libya, issued press statements through the night saying more than 1,300 people had been killed in fighting in the city, but that government troops remained in control in Tripoli. Earlier Sunday, protesters took to the streets, and cells of rebels inside Tripoli clashed with Gaddafi royalists. This is all according to press releases from the war zone. By midnight, Colonel Gaddafi's forces had withdrawn from many districts without a major battle. Blah, 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 blah. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland said in a statement, quote, clearly the offensive for Tripoli is underway. Gaddafi's days are numbered, end quote. They like to say that, don't they? I don't know. Maybe that's cool. I'm probably, once again, on the wrong side of the issue here. I have enough people tell me that. Democrats and liberals tell me I'm way on the wrong side of the Obama story question. And, of course, the jack-legged, half-ass conservatives always say, you know what the hell you're talking about, you son of a bitch. Which is okay. I guess, you know, I mean, I don't care. I don't care. But this particular story, there's just something, I don't know, something double plus ungood about this whole Libya thing, isn't there? You know, how long ago was it when the U.S. oil companies offered absolution for all of Libya's crimes, all of Gaddafi's crimes? Remember that? What was all that about? And all of a sudden we lifted embargoes against Libya, and the Brits even sent home the person that allegedly was the mastermind of the shoot down over Lockerbie, Scotland, that took almost 300 lives. And then there were news reports that Gaddafi had come on the side of the angels, that would be us, of course, and had forsworn all of his bad old days, his, you know, I think it's very easy to understand if you watch him for longer than 5 minutes to come to the conclusion that Gaddafi is clinically nuts, or else it's a good act. I can remember, 20 years ago when Baba Wawa interviewed him? Do you remember? Do you remember Barbara Walters sitting there talking with Muammar Gaddafi inside the tent somewhere in the Libyan desert or something? I don't know. And it was just like the theater of the absurd. Here's this crack American journalist, Barbara, by God, Walters, who's Jewish. And this tribal Bedouin chieftain, Muammar Gaddafi, who's Muslim. And there they sat. And I got the impression that Gaddafi was trying to seduce her with his eyes. Of course, Gaddafi at one point in his life probably could have seduced anybody on earth with his eyes. Damn fine looking man, wasn't he, girls? Huh? Woohoo! And boys. But that was then. This is now. So, another tyrant. Another, though, call it Middle Eastern, even though it's North African, but it doesn't matter, you know. It's all over there. Another Middle Eastern tyrant falls. Look out, Mr. Assad. Yoo-hoo. Be careful when you get tomorrow morning's mail. But it's all done in the interest of human rights, humanitarian efforts. All of this is. And sure, who am I to argue? Sitting here in the bunker in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, what the hell do I know what's going on in the mountains of Libya? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I only know what I read in the press, and by God, Gaddafi had it coming. Yep. Yes, he did. He had it coming, and he's another one of those goddamn Middle Eastern tyrants sitting on top of, well, you know, resources that shouldn't be in the hands of these damn Bedouin sheikhs. You know what I'm saying? Just shouldn't be, unless it's the Saudi royal family, and that's different because, you know, they're Bush business partners and they're well connected. But Gaddafi? Nah. You can tell by looking at Gaddafi. Psycho boy, right? Crazy bastard, wasn't he? We've been trying to get him since Reagan bombed him. Remember that? Reagan bombed him after, what was it, After the Lebanon attack on Marines. No, that's when we invaded Grenada, after the 240 Marines were blown into pieces because Reagan ordered them to stay in their barracks unarmed in Beirut. Remember that? But which president was it? What was it? I guess it was Reagan who went after Muammar Gaddafi and killed one of his children? But, of course, it was a stepchild, so it didn't really count. Remember that? How long have we been pursuing Muammar Gaddafi? 25 years? 30? It's a long time to go after somebody. Well, we got him now! Yeah, goddamn right! And to watch the breathless, goose-pimpled anchor girls on television. Woohoo! And the macho, ballsy men standing out there. Yeah, I've been riding around with the rebels over here for CNN. Look at me. I carry a sidearm, but I can't show it to you on the television. Yeah, we've been out here. I'm covered in dust. Look at me. Oh, damn. I got this dumbass-looking black helmet on, but that's what they make me wear. Now back to our studios in New York and Rebecca Fancy Pants. Rebecca, take it away. Yeah, hell yeah. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Black. Ooh. Black has a message. Jewel E. We're now legal for a third of a century. Thanks for being my light and doing what you can here to keep it lit. And it's signed Black. Well, I like these mysterious ones. Thanks, DN. Well, I do have his name. But I like the Black part. Signed Black. To Julie, we're now legal for a third of a century. Thanks for being my light and doing what you can here to keep it lit. Signed Black. Thank you, Black. Don't forget the website, October2011.org. October2011.org. That is especially important in light of what has been happening over this past weekend. We've been talking about the XL pipeline demonstrations, the tar sand demonstrations in Washington, D.C. We mentioned this earlier tonight, but I want to go a little bit more in depth about this. Because there was a nasty little wrinkle added to the arrests. Let me tell you, if you don't know, how it usually works. And it's worked this way for decades. After the violence of the civil rights demonstrations back in the 60s, where people were beaten severely by local cops, mostly here in the South, but not just in the South. After the political disorders that occurred after the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968, where the mayor of Chicago, William Daley, was it William? Yeah, it was William. Yeah. Ordered the cops to just beat the living hell out of demonstrators. After all of the violence, the police violence, usually demonstrators show up unarmed, unprotected. That's the way it started out, to peacefully assemble, to petition their government for redress of grievances, yada, 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 yada. It's all there in the First Amendment. Well, the authorities didn't play fair. The authorities would wade in to crowds of unprotected demonstrators who were usually sitting or singing or arms locked and beat the living hell out of them. And people would wind up in jail, hospitals, emergency rooms. It was pretty nasty. So as the whole realization began to manifest that power does not relinquish its own self, and a lot of people in this country only found that out from reading the works of revolutionaries, whether they were good or bad doesn't make any difference. Revolutionaries like Lenin or Mao or Che Guevara, it doesn't make any difference. The tactics for peaceful revolution start as tactics for peaceful revolution. And it's only when they are ignored or the peaceful demonstrators are seriously assaulted, gassed, beaten, hosed, attacked with police dogs, had their eardrums burst, what have you. That's when people who are demonstrating say, well, wait a goddamn minute. If this is a peaceful demonstration, a nonviolent demonstration, why are we being attacked? Okay, well, you know. You have been a witness to that kind of history. If not, there's plenty of video around that you can look at. The last time, let me back up. Back in the late 70s, when I used to be active here in the South in environmental movement, anti-nuke primarily, there was a standard practice. When a demonstration would be planned against one of the capitalist mass killers, for example, DuPont, in Barnwell, South Carolina, a An agreement would be worked out prior to the demonstration between the demonstrator, the leaders of the demonstration and the local authorities so that there wouldn't be violence. Especially, again, referencing the South. Because in the South, the SOP has been somebody shows up to demonstrate against some rule or some law, you beat them senseless. That's the way to stop demonstrations. Just beat them up. Especially if they happen to be dark skinned. Beat the living hell out of them. Get some blood on the pavement there. That'll, you know, because once the blood starts to flow, other people will say, well, wait, I'll change my mind. I think I'll stay home and watch television. You know how this works. Barnwell, South Carolina, 1978. I think it was 78. A demonstration against DuPont that had opened a facility down there to store plutonium until a permanent repository could be found. Now, DuPont Chemical Company is pretty well known around the globe for mass pollution, death, destruction. The members of the DuPont family tried to help overthrow Franklin Roosevelt back in the 30s. The whole fascist movement it goes back to has its genesis in these companies that have been around for a long time. Well, DuPont is one of the more egregious offenders of everything decent in this country. They have no respect for environmental laws. They have no respect for safety and workplace health regulations. No respect for unions. No respect for organized labor. Nothing. Nothing. Just give me the money, and when I dump my effluvial crap into your waterways and your air and your ground, shut up. We'll dig a hole. We'll dump it in a hole. You know. So a demonstration was planned, and the leaders from South Carolina, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name, but had sat down and had meetings with the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, SLED, and or State Law Enforcement Division. The acronym was SLED, and everything was worked out how this is going to be done. This is a demonstration that Helen Caldicott participated in, and some notables, and then us common folk. And we had a meeting the night before, rally the night before, everybody camped out, and yada, 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 yada. The agreement was there would be a march down this country road, and approach the corporate property of DuPont. And then volunteers among us would cross onto DuPont's property. Now, we couldn't get inside the fence, but we crossed a ditch and stood on the little hump of land outside the corporate fence, and that was considered DuPont property. At that point, South Carolina State Police would move in and arrest us. And we would be, by prearrangement, there would be no head busting. There would be no truncheons brought down on our knees or elbows. There would be no stomping on our feet. A lot of us wore sandals, tennis shoes. It would just be an orderly arrest. And everybody agreed to to the tactics that would be used. And it went off as planned. We marched to the end of the road, crossed onto this little teeny tiny stretch of DuPont property. There was very little, if any, media there, of course. When we were arrested, we were put on big prison buses, taken down the road about 8 miles, fingerprinted, photographed, paid our $10, which was a bond on a $100 fine, and left. And that was the end of it. That kind of cooperation was worked out for very important reasons. More in a second.
They're gonna work you for peanuts. Hush, little baby. Don't organize.
mission against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. So anyway, to make a long story short, and a boring one at that too, rules and agreements were worked out to handle civil disobedience. Because the immediate past history of civil disobedience in this country was one of violence, police violence. Peaceful protesters never did a damn thing except show up. If they showed up for voting rights activities, their buses were set on fire. If they set up showed up for equal access to public accommodations, the restaurant was closed and the protesters were dragged outside and beaten. If they wanted voting rights, police dogs were turned on. You understand how it goes. So rules and agreements were set up. We will show up to demonstrate. You, police, please control your goddamn impulses to violence. Please. If you need to arrest us because we're exercising our First Amendment rights, okay, we'll go along peacefully. But let's be a little bit civilized about this, because if not, if you continue to do this, police establishment, eventually you're going to have on your hands, instead of 500 people showing up, 5 million. And you don't have enough jails to contain everybody. That was the implied threat. And I think the government, in all of its different phases, from county all the way up to federal, understands that that threat is still there. But because people have gotten away from demonstrating, the threat has faded. As recently as this past March, when I was popped in D.C. along with a lot of other people for protesting the wars and the imprisonment of Bradley Manning, an agreement had been reached out prior to, to our arrest. That those of us who were, according to the authorities, a pain in the ass enough to want to stand there and get arrested. Okay, make your point. Oh, you're going to stand in front of the White House. Okay, here's the deal. We will come up and arrest you. Put your hands out. We'll put the plastic cuffs on. Take you away. Book you. Process you. Fine you $100. You'll be in and out within a couple, 3-4 hours. Now shut up. Go do your First Amendment crap. Okay. And that's what we did. The idea being that if enough people commit enough civil disobedience, do you get that word? Disobedience. That maybe the point will be made, the point will be taken. That's the hope anyway, but I think those days are kind of gone. Possibly what happened with the tar sands protesters this weekend might be the first little incremental step indicating those days of prior negotiations between the protesters and the authorities are ending. The tar sands demonstrators had the same agreement we had on March 19th, same agreement that we had in June of 78, same agreement that most demonstrations, nonviolent, I'm not talking about ones that are anarchistic in their attitude, small a, I'm talking about the ones where people assemble peacefully, as prescribed by prescribed by the First Amendment, to petition their government for redress of grievances. And again, what happened over the weekend here may be the end of that ability to work things out before the action begins. Because the tar sands protesters had basically the same agreement. We will go peacefully. With the understanding that when you take us to jail, we can bond ourselves out, pay our $100, and be gone. But we're going to be back the next day and the day after. That's what this rally, that's what these demonstrations are about. Well, sure, said the authorities. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened. The arrests occurred because demonstrators were there protesting a plan by the this company, TransCanada, to build this pipeline that would carry oil from the Alberta-Canada tar sands 1,700 miles across aquifers, rivers, farmlands, forests to Texas. The people who put together the demonstrations and who participated are concerned about the pipeline's potentially disastrous environmental impact. Disastrous environmental impact. Huh? You, those three words go together just like peanut butter and jelly, right? Disastrous environmental impact. Jane Hamster, Jane Hamster, who was one of the people arrested on Saturday, along with Bill McKibben, environmental activist, and other folks. Jane Hamster is connected, of course, to Fire Dog Lake blog. She described what happened after they were busted and how the agreement with the authorities broke down or wasn't intended to be honored to begin with. And we'll share that with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hi, truth seekers. It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Black, and his message is to Jewel E. We're now legal for a third of a century. Thanks for being my light and doing what you can here to keep it lit. Signed, Black. All right, thank you. A little background before I give you Jane Hamster of Fire Dog Lake's description of what happened. The protesters showed up. About 70 people decided to participate in the arrest. By prior agreement, the procedure of the civil disobedience action were worked out, with the authorities. So the cops gave the obligatory three warnings to protesters and signaled that those still along the fence were under arrest. One by one, they were put in police vehicles, taken to the police station, D.C. to be processed. A very familiar procedure to anyone who's been busted in the past 20 years in D.C. And the activists were charged with failure to obey a lawful order. This is what they charge you with. Sometimes they also charge you with trespass. But usually it's fail to avoid a lawful order, because charging with trespass, if you're on public property and you're exercising your First Amendment right, you might have a case. So failure to avoid a lawful order is the charge du jour when it comes to people who are trying to protest actions taken by the U.S. government or branches of the U.S. government. And thank goodness we live in a land where those rights are afforded us, right? As the right-wingers like to say, well, how'd you like to live in Cuba, you son of a bitch? You couldn't stand there in front of the White House in Cuba. Well, there is no White House in Cuba. Oh, never mind. In jail, the activists over this weekend were expected to be processed out quickly. Again, that's how it works. And according to Kevin Gastola, writing at Fire Dog Lake, the tar sands organizers, after multiple phone calls and impersonal meetings with the U.S. Park Police, they were told that the organizers who protested and got busted would be able to pay a $100 fine and be released the same day. But the U.S. Park Police went back on what they said and made a decision to hold the activists for 48 hours. And here's the kicker. The park police told the Tar Sands Action organizers that the jail time was given to deter future participants from engaging in civil disobedience. In other words, we'll show you little sons of bitches. Now, again, take it from somebody who's been arrested. When you have worked out the agreement, because you are there for civil disobedience, you're not there to riot, you're not there to smash down fences and attack. You're there to use your body in civil disobedience as laid out by King, by Gandhi, by the man right now in India who is also displaying the tactics of civil disobedience, peaceful civil disobedience, the same tactic that's planned for this October in Washington, D.C. And the authorities decided, screw you. Of course we agreed to it, but this is one way we're going to try to deter you from doing it again. Oh, so you're acting like mommy and daddy. The first time I don't eat my peas, you send me to my room. The second time I don't eat my peas, you take away some of my privileges. Oh, well, that'll certainly get me to eat my peas for sure. So the demonstrators, once they got into jail, were held 48 hours. Now, again, when you participate in something like this, you don't go into jail planning on staying there for 48 hours. If you take medicine, you don't have your medicine with you. A lot of people who are busted in these civil disobedience actions are people over the age of 50 because somehow the younger generation, so much of the younger generation, has decided to opt out. Okay. So be it. But the older people who go into these actions, go into jail, are people who, because they're older, have to have things like their medication handy. Or whatever little personal things that they have to do over an extended period of time. The police give you the middle finger. They don't give a goddamn. They take everything away from you. Medicine? Oh, well, you'll have to see the medical officer. Well, how do I do that? Well, it's a weekend. It's not here. Ha, ha, ha! This is how it works, you see. So anyway, the tar sands protesters were told, "Look, we are interested in preventing the tar sands action from building any momentum. So we're going to teach you a lesson." Now, this in a society where people who are responsible for the spills. In this instance, the poisoning of the environment, the murder of wildlife, the destruction of livelihood, those rotten goddamn freaks never go to jail for 48 hours or for anything. But if you protest against the potential of it happening again, you're going to jail. You're going to jail. You will not get in the way of this capitalist enterprise. It doesn't matter how dangerous it is. You're going to jail. You're going to jail. But what about the people who destroyed the Gulf of Mexico? Well, that's something different. So over the weekend, the people that by prior agreement to maintain their peaceful civil disobedience, those people were stabbed in the back. Stabbed in the back. When they were busted, they went to jail and they stayed there. You sons of bitches, boy, I'll tell you. Jane Hampshire writing at Fire Dog Lake, quote, "All 65 of us were crammed into 4 6-by-8 holding cells, we measure them, with a toilet at the end. I was held with other women who took part in the demonstration. The park police took all our jackets and sweaters away, which left a bunch of women in spaghetti straps. They said they were worried we'd hang ourselves if they let us keep our jackets." You rotten, militaristic sons of bitches, you. Then they cranked up the air conditioning so everyone was really cold. We asked for something warm, so they brought us 3 yellow styrofoam sheets. They said that was all they had. So we ripped them in two and rotated them with 2 women, sharing them at a time. But when someone had to pee, we all turned our backs and used the sheets as sort of a wall so they'd have a little privacy. End quote. McKibben and some 50 other protesters were being held until a hearing 2 p.m. earlier today. Now, the tar sands protest is scheduled to last for 2 weeks. Over 2,000 people have signed up to protest and risk being arrested. There is speculation that the authorities are trying to stop the protest so that it doesn't coincide with the dedication of the new Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial in Washington scheduled for this coming weekend. Yes, okay, insert your own statement of ironic idiocy right there, okay? They don't want civil disobedience to be occurring while the dedication of the statue of Martin Luther King Jr. is occurring. Oh, my God. Think about it. Go ahead. I'll give you 5 seconds. That's enough. And from what Kevin Gostola wrote, ironically, U.S. Park Police are arbitrarily enforcing provisions of the law because the planned sit-ins that are to take place from now until September 2nd will conflict with the dedication of a new memorial for Martin Luther King Jr., who was a great believer in the power of civil disobedience to bring about social change and justice. After being arrested for taking nonviolent direct action against segregation by Birmingham city government and downtown retailers, King wound up in jail and wrote a letter from a Birmingham jail. Now, the people who want to build this pipeline, the capitalists who insist, will not go to jail no matter what happens. It doesn't make any difference. If the spills that will occur do occur, who's going to go to jail? Nobody. The corporations involved, and there will be several of them. It's not just TransCanada. There will be several corporations involved. They will wind up having to pay a civil fine. The farmers, the fishermen, the commercial aspects of this, the private, the small businesses that will be destroyed, wiped out. The farmland that's going to be gutted. The arboreal forests that are going to be cut down. Do you know how much forest has to be cut down? Thousands. Where is it? Where's the damn number here? Thousands of acres of forest have to be cut down. More on this when we come back. Stick around. It gets even worse. By Black. Black's message, quote, "We're now legal for a third of a century. Thanks for being my light and doing what you can here to keep it lit." That's addressed to Jewel E. from Black. Black, thanks for the sponsorship and also for the kind message to Jewel. The tar sands protests this past weekend, and it goes on all this week. Up until next weekend, I believe, or beyond. I think it's a 2-week protest. You can find out everything you want to know about the protest by going to tarsandsaction.org. Tarsandsaction.org. But again, going back to the possible, let's be real, the probable consequences of the construction of the 1,700-mile-long toxic sewer. As reported, I think, also by Fire Dog Lake, the possible construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, prime example, something that would be a huge injustice that would threaten justice everywhere. This is one of the points that Dr. King tried to make. The Trans-Canada pipeline will wind its way from Alberta to Texas through Nebraska and ruin the livelihoods of farmers while at the same time polluting the Sandhills and the Oglala Aquifer in Nebraska. It would put the Missouri, Yellowstone, Cheyenne, and Niobrara rivers at risk of spills. The Trans-Canada CEO and others claim, or can claim, the project, quote, will meet or exceed world-class safety and environmental standards, end quote, until they're blue in the face. They can say it will be the safest pipeline in the U.S., but there's no reason to believe any corporate executive from TransCanada that makes the claim. This is the company that's been responsible for at least 12 oil spills, one spill in North Dakota from their so-called state-of-the-art Keystone pipeline resulted in a six-story geyser that gushed at least 21,000 gallons of oil into the environment. There is no fail-safe way to drill for, bring to the surface, or transport petroleum. There, it does not exist. Now, the New York Times is the source of the destruction. The cutting down of some 740,000 acres of boreal forest. Remember that word, boreal? We looked it up last week, or I did. Northern forest. Northern. Northward facing, northern, 740,000 acres destroyed. The forest is a natural carbon reservoir. Cutting it down not only paves the way, almost literally, for this filthy goddamn pipeline, but also which will result in carbon going to the atmosphere, but also eliminates a carbon sink or a carbon reservoir. 740,000 acres of forest. The guy who runs, where is that quote? The guy who runs TransCanada, I think it's the guy who runs it. Said they don't do, where is it, for God's sake? They don't do Kyoto-style crap. I mean, they're not interested. What are you talking about? Global warming? Get out of town. Global warming? Oh, here it is. Canada's government, this is, again, New York Times, is committed to the tar sands business. Alberta's energy minister, Ronald Liepert, has declared, quote, I'm not interested in Kyoto-style policies, end quote. Now, obviously, the United States can't do much about that. If Canada was Muslim, we could just attack the way we did in so many other countries, including Libya, like we talked about earlier in the program. But Canada is not a Muslim country. They're white people. And except for the ones that speak French, they're just like us, right? So we're not going to attack Canada. So there's not too much we can do about the statement about Alberta's energy minister. I'm not interested in Kyoto-style policies, which is not a reason for the U.S. to attack Canada, because we're not interested in those policies either. But the U.S. can stop the Keystone XL pipeline. You know it's not going to happen. Two powerful voices involved in this. Since it crosses the national boundary of the United States, the State Department, Hillary Clinton, and the chief executive, Barack Obama, they can stop this with a click of their fingers. Bang, it's over. But they will not. A 1,700-mile pipeline called the Keystone XL will carry diluted bitumen, an acidic crude oil. That is worse than your average oil that's extracted. But in the meantime, protesters in D.C. will continue to exercise their First Amendment rights of petitioning the government for redress of grievances. And they will continue to be arrested. And if what the authorities did in D.C. this past weekend is any indication, the people being arrested will also continue to be punished a little bit extra in order to deter other people from exercising their First Amendment rights. See how that works? I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.